There we are.
Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. We're pumped to be back. Joe got to do a little primitive R&R in Pennsylvania somewhere, undisclosed. You were looking at the stars. You were enjoying...
Looking for Bigfoot.
Yeah. I saw you did some ghost stuff last week. How did that go? I mean, I watched a little bit.
Yeah. You want my take?
Yeah.
I'm the science cynic. Okay. So here's the real story. So I love the history of that place.
Right.
I forgot I was ghost hunting and I was going into all the cells and see if I could find any things that were left behind by some of the inmates. Like I was going into little drawers and desks and under things and whatever. And it was this one cell that had like a book that the prisoner was reading. It was locked up. It was couldn't get in. And there was a cup. And I was trying to like read. I want to see what they're reading. So I was reaching there trying to grab what book it was or steal the cup too. But literally, I forgot I was ghost hunting the whole time. Now there was one instance where they set you up, set the mood, get it super dark, get in your head a little bit and whatever.
Sure.
It was 2 o'clock in the morning, right? I was like really tired. And for those of you who don't know me, I wake up at 5 a.m. and I go to bed at 10 at the very latest. Yeah. So this is late for me.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there and pitch black in a room with like 5 other people. And I'm just sitting there and I'm almost falling asleep. And I open my eyes because I think to myself, if I fall asleep, these teachers are just going to leave. And I'm going to be sitting in a dark room by myself and probably panic. And so like I opened my eyes and I was kind of trying to keep myself awake. And I started becoming delirious. I started seeing like things out there. So that they were like, they saw a flashlight earlier and I couldn't figure out whose it was. And so they're calling it. They were like, if you have that flashlight, come towards me. And I watch this little light go, do, 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 do. Like they'd say it and it would move. And I'm like, oh, I'm crazy now. I'm insane.
That's so funny. So you did that. It was good. And shows and stuff were good last week. We weren't here. I was in New Jersey. I snuck away for a couple days with my family. I got to meet my brother's youngest, which was really cool. Got to take my Benjamin for his 6th birthday to the Jersey Shore and the boardwalk and had a blast swimming, got a little sun kissed and sunburnt. We use this like spray suntan stuff and I don't think it worked that well.
No.
And my nose was all peeling and poor Charlotte was like, why is my face melting? I'm like, sweetie, you're okay.
So you got the sunscreen in the placebo bottle.
Yeah, apparently. I mean, we spent 6 hours in the water, so I don't think it mattered what we put on. It came off when we went in. She's our fish. And so
is there more than one Jersey Shore, by the way?
Well, I mean, it's all the Jersey Shore, but Jersey Shore in what way?
I'm in the middle of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Right. Like four hours from right here.
Yeah.
And there was a sign where we were that said Jersey Shore 50 miles. And I'm like, there's no way we're close to the Jersey Shore by 50 miles. We're in the middle of Pennsylvania.
Yeah. I don't know about the middle. Maybe the exit for the next highway to get on to maybe drive another couple hundred miles. But I mean, the Jersey Shore obviously extends up and down the, coast of New Jersey, and you can go all the way down to the tip of Cape May or all the way up to, LBI or one of those, beaches close to New York. And so, I mean, it can take you 2.5 hours maybe to drive the whole coast. But side to side, once you're in New Jersey, maybe an hour to the beach, depending on where you're at. We go to Ocean City because it's just a beautiful little Methodist town from the 1800s. It's a dry town.
Is it really?
So as soon as you cross the bridge to go out of Ocean City or in, there is one of the largest, maybe the largest liquor stores in either the state or the country. It's huge. And it's right there because there's no booze on the, once you cross the bridge, there's no bars, there's no nothing. So everybody stops there and takes it to their shore house. And there's a whole strip of bars on the bayside because as soon as you get over into Summers Point, which is just outside, that's where it all is. But we go there because it's great. It's very family friendly and boardwalk's really nice. Water's nice. And so we had a blast.
What is that, the water?
The water
is nice. I got a tinge of it in there.
My wife is, I do water bottle, water ice. She does water for everything. The sea water was
water.
I have to think about it to say water. We did all the things. We ate the pizza, we rode the rides, and just we went till they dropped, and the kids had a blast. It was great. And then my uncle called me and was like, hey, I have 4 club box seats to the Eagles. Do you want to go? And I'm like, that's awesome. Well, we were planning this birthday party for Benjamin the next night with like cake and everything. So we did that a little early. And then we were like, peace, and nice. Went to the game. Got to take Graham to his first Eagles game. And at that Eagles game, they lost 35-0. It was ugly. It was not fun to watch. He had a blast the entire time. He danced. Every time music came on, he'd see people on the big screen. We're like, buddy, if you dance hard enough, they'll put you on the big screen. So he was going for it. Nice. And loved every second of it. Yelled so much and booed so much that he lost his voice. I kept joking with him. Like, did you find it yet? Did you get it?
Dad joke.
Yeah, it's bad. But, you know, actually that Eagles game leads me to the topic that I want to talk about.
Topic. Nice.
I want to talk about, the art of winning, the way people win. You know, that was a football game. It was 35-0. And realistically, all I wanted was the Eagles to score one time, a stinking field goal, and yell the fight song with my son. And it was 35-0. That opportunity never came. I got to watch him very, animated boo and be all upset at stuff. And that was very fun to watch, because I'm like, that was most of my life watching the Eagles. It was a lot of booing and throwing things. And it's only been recent that they've been any good. But, watching them play, and the preseason's tough because you're trying to gauge talent. You're not really trying to win the game. You don't really care. You want to get some reps, and you want to see which guys are going to make the team, which guys aren't. But I think in life right now, there's just a tough sense for most people. Is winning even important? Right now, you have a lot going on with Afghanistan, right? After 20 years, it looks like we just lost. And some people may say, well, we should have pulled out or whatever. I understand that the vast majority of people think we shouldn't have been there in the first place. And we can have a whole policy discussion. But at the end of the day, you're in the game. Like, I hate feeling like we forfeited there. I'm coaching U8 soccer. And we tied 3-3 on Saturday for our first game. Now, Graham had 2 assists and a goal. It was a lot of fun for him. Benjamin played great. But I'm getting to know the kids, getting to know the team a little bit still. And 3-3 is just like, I wish somebody would have won. Like, I hate tying. Like, it's, I don't know. I hate participation trophies. Like, all of it. There's something about playing to win in life, in business, regardless. And winning may look different to everybody. But do you find that competitiveness, that winning edge, that sort of stuff is important?
Oh, for sure. It's everything. I'm honestly, yeah. You don't start a game to tie. I mean, nobody does. You wouldn't expense the energy if all you were trying to do was like mail it in. And the culture supports mailing it in.
Right.
So winners struggle a little bit, because you're brand new to this. So football teams sometimes lose, yeah. Right? I'm a Browns fan. So having 10 consecutive seasons, right, of loss, there's not a day where I said, yeah, we're always going to be here, yeah, right? You're in it because you know that this team one day will put something on the field that will win, and you're going to ride along with them until that day comes. It's never like, oh, we're a bad team. I just like showing up and drinking, and I'm going to celebrate my badness.
Right. Well, some guys do make it a game of that with the Browns.
True, true.
But I definitely agree with that. That winning edge, that winning sense has to be found somewhere. But what I find so elusive about winning is winning requires everything from you. It requires dedication, sacrifice, pain. It requires early mornings, late nights. It doesn't matter what you're doing. If you want to be the best at it and you want to win, you do that. But even when you do that, sometimes the guy who mails it in beats you. And it's you give everything to win, and sometimes you still lose to somebody who didn't put in as much effort as you. It's almost not fair in that sense. As much as meritocracy is a good thing and it's important to work for what you have, there are those times where you look at and the bad team beat the good team. Like, the good team showed up and it just wasn't their day. I remember playing on some crappy teams from time to time, and the coach would say, hey, boys, we're going to go out there and give it our best because we only need one. We just got to win today. Doesn't matter that they may be the better team 100 times out of 100. We just need one. And, how do you reconcile that? And how do you wrap your head around that? The Eagles fans were still booing, even though it was a preseason game. Listening to the radio on the way home, people were still flipping out because it was like, well, they didn't even try. It was frustrating in that sense. But how do you navigate that? Because you can do all the right things and still lose.
Well, it's what you pick. If I want to be embarrassed that I would play a basketball game against the NBA team, right?
Right.
So if you pick a challenge where your likelihood that you're going to lose, you're looking for a Hail Mary, something you're unlikely to do. But there's an infinite amount of opportunities that are in every different direction. What you select is most important. So if you go out there and find a void in it where you can compete and you can win, that's where you need to start until you get your chops together and you're practiced up, and then you can go against an NBA team. A lot of people, what they'll do that is they'll be like all boisterous going against something that the math doesn't work out. I could have told you what was going to happen before you started. So yeah, a little bit easier that way.
So that's so interesting you say that. So after taking Graham to the Eagles game on Thursday, Sunday, we had a couple of the young guys from church that were playing in their first Pop Warner game with pads and everything. Probably like, fifth, sixth, seventh grade, like that sort of football where, they're not throwing a ton of passes. They're basically, everything's a little bit in slow-mo and there's one kid that's pretty good. And watching that versus watching the NFL is drastically different.
Sure.
But if you put those kids up against an NFL team, obviously it's over. Like people are dying, getting
there's
hurt.
So many other places that are in need of someone to go win in them, but everybody's clamoring for these weird, sexy, slivers of that. And then it's too competitive. There's too many people there.
So, my son, Graham, who was at the Eagles game, we're sitting there with a bunch of people from church, and my wife goes to him, we're at Boardman High School Stadium. She goes, oh, one day, Graham, you could play here. And he goes, no, I don't want to play there. I'm just going to play in the NFL. Just going to play with the Vikings and the Steelers. He starts rattling off teams. And we were like, I think you're going to have to play here first.
Right.
But that's so true. It's almost very John Nash of you. It's very beautiful mind. Everybody goes after the hot girl. But in reality, he says it's better for you to go after number two or number three. You have a better likelihood,
statistical chance, but then you can still put it like in a capacity. Like when I was riding along with the Browns, there were like these subdivisions of it where, the Browns were losing, but the Browns were just the vessel. Right.
Yeah.
And so if you're going in business and your goal in life is to be in business and to have a multinational corporation, have billions of dollars in assets. Right. Well, that's the overall vessel.
Right.
You're losing on day one when you're in that big vessel, but there are little things that can lead up to that or connected that are way more achievable that are in your wheelhouse.
Yeah. It's picking the $10,000 win at that point instead of the $2 million win.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Totally makes sense. Most people don't want the incremental. We've talked about this a lot. It's better to get a 1 yard run than, not hike the ball at all and stand there and be like, I wish the game were different, or throw Hail Mary every time. It just doesn't work. For those people that are impatient, how do you build patience in? Because it does take patience to win. It's taken the Browns had a winning season for the first time in 20 years or whatever it was, since 1999 when they drafted Tim Couch. There you go. I'll throw some. Justin was sitting here. He would have some stats on that. But, you look at those sort of elements, and you guys have waited 20 years, and I think actually the Browns have a real good shot at being pretty decent this year. I mean, last year was a big winning season for them. I think Baker Mayfield, and they put a lot of the pieces together that they could really turn some heads this year. But you had to wait 20 years. You had to go through a whole series of coaches, how many quarterbacks and everything else to finally arrive at this point. And everybody will look at that as a wasted time or wasted season, but it was figuring out who this next team was going to be and who that was. And so it's not necessarily, it sucks to lose, but it's brought you to this place and you're going to appreciate the win so much more now.
Now we've worked a lot with people who have substance problems and, have addiction issues. And one of the big things about our lack of patience is that how our culture's kind of squished everything down, that everything's in bite-sized pieces. It has to be remedied in 30 minutes. We can't go beyond a month, let alone years, for something to come to fruition. So it's almost in our brain, we're addicted to the dopamine that needs to happen now. I'm not going to wait for it. And if I'm going to wait for it, I'm going to bail on to doing something else.
Yeah.
So we're kind of playing the opposite game that we just illustrated. So you're giving up when you've got 10% invested in something and there's no payoff except for you just wasted 10% because there's no chance of paying off in that short amount of time.
Yeah, it's true. And I think even like with, podcasting, you and I started doing this almost 2 years ago. We started experimenting two falls ago.
Sure.
And, to September of 19. Wow. So 2 years ago next month, we started playing around with this idea. And, you start looking at all the pieces and the stuff that's followed. And some people would say, well, are you going to make money in the first 6 months? No, I might not make money in the first 5 years. but we didn't do this to make money like that, but it's all in how you measure that success and the wins as well. You know, if winning is, hey, we've helped people and we've gotten our message out, then that's a win for us, whether it puts 2 cents in our pocket or nothing. Does that make sense?
Can I ruin this for you real quick? Cause I'm going to go into law of attraction mode here. Okay. Cause I can't pass on it. Right.
All right,
and so when you read the book, the conditioning that you take, like the self-conditioning that you take is basically hard or hacking your neurosystems, mm-hmm. To be able to, you know, delay pleasure and to be in it for the long haul. So when I have a win or I have a loss, I sort of like reverse engineer it to see how it came to fruition. Mm. And guess what the answer is every time? It was me. I'm the one who stood in the way from the very get-go. Because if you interviewed me on day one and said, Joe, can you do this? You would say, no, you can't make money within 6 months, right? Mm. So the programming was built into you when you started it. And until you can overcome the chance that you can make money because you could have made money in the first 6 months.
Right.
Right. And and here's how that it would have been engineered. If we sat down and you said, Joe, we can't do it. And I'm like, oh, is that a challenge? You want to make it within the first month, think about the things that would have been different. Now, we might not have been doing the same kind of show. We might not have been in the same place. Mm. But if the goal was making money, 6 months could have been the goal if that's what we set out. We had a platform that we wanted to develop a brand and a personality and chemistry and something that's solid that can go longer than 6 months.
Yep. No, it totally makes sense. So it depends on what winning is.
What the goal was.
Yeah.
What you pick. I mean, what I started this out with, if you pick something that you don't believe, you're right. Yep.
Whether you can or can't, you are correct.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, I think when I think about winning, obviously sports is an easy area. What do you do? Some people like reframe their losses to make them wins. And I find that so frustrating because it's disingenuous, right? Like you set out, you know, if we set out to make money in the first 6 months and didn't make money, and then we're like, actually what we were doing was like, it's just so disingenuous. Right. And people do that all the time to justify themselves, to make them look better, to make their social media feel better so that they don't have to deal with the loss. How important is it if you're going to be a winner to deal with your losses authentically, not just reframe them, not just, hey, this didn't happen, and therefore, you know, it's going to happen this way. And in the Christian world, people do this all the time. They're like, well, God actually wanted me, and, you know, and they'll blame it on the big guy and say, well, actually, you know, we're going to do this. Sometimes that's true, but most of the time just didn't work out the way you thought it was going to work out. And so you're reframing it so you feel better about yourself. How important is it to stare in the mirror and deal with the L for what it is?
Well, a lot of us aren't like you and I would do that. We'd stare ourselves down and we'd tell the truth to ourselves because it'd be stupid to lie to ourselves. But a lot of us are addicted to that dopamine. And so like starting over and doing it again gets another rush of the dopamine. So whether it's fail or lose, you get your drug no matter what.
Interesting. So you're saying regardless, if I justify and, you know, make myself feel better, I'll get the dopamine.
Yeah. Or, so let's change it. Let's say, okay, you like cake. Right.
Love cake.
But you got fat.
Yeah.
Right. And so you're like, hey, I want to not eat cake.
Yeah.
Right. And so you go along and somebody's like, hey, dude, you're eating some cake. You're like, oh, shucks. Now I got to go back and then eat cake. You know, it's this a cycle that you create. Yeah. So you get to repeat the thing you wanted to do anyway, while explaining it as if there was another thing that went along with it. It draws attention to you, you get the chemicals with it, and you get to still eat the freaking cake. Versus you just go in your living room and you eat cake and nobody cares, nobody pays attention to you. And it was an undramatic effect that wasn't a little, you know, flag in your life.
Interesting. That's fascinating because I can see that personally for myself, and I can see that with other people that I've been coaching. You know, you're saying in that sense, we don't want, if we don't win, we'll continue to come back to the starting line because we like everybody cheering for us before we start.
For sure. That's the addiction. And then it makes the, you know, you'll say in words with the thing that you want, but you know that it's a package that comes with a bunch of other stuff that, you know, makes you feel it. You know how many people go through the same chaotic event over and over and over again?
Yeah.
Right. And they're subscribed to it. It's almost like they're stuck in this loop, and it's 50% subconscious. They really know they're doing it, but they don't know they're doing it. And if you ask them if they're doing it, they'll say, hell no. What do you, of course, I don't want that accusing me of.
Totally. That. So how do you break the loop? How does Joe break the loop?
All right. So I wanted to know, it had to come from you knowing truth. Like if you don't, if you're a bullshitter and you just want to paint that picture, you're going to do that forever.
Yeah.
And it's best not to put energy into people who want to play in that eternal loop. You have to wait for them to say to you, I want to start eyeballing what really is happening. Hmm. Right. And if that doesn't happen, I mean, what are you going to do? Are you going to snap them into it? Are you going to shake them a little bit? I mean,
well, you think it's a, and I can have this complex being a pastor sometimes. Like, if I just have this conversation, I say it in the right way. And after all the years of ministry now, I know that that's not true. Like, one more counseling session is not going to help.
Right.
Like, at the end of the day, it ultimately comes down to their decision and their choices. We can sit and talk about it till the cows come home. But ultimately, they got to go home and put rubber to the road. I mean, that's true for everybody. But
half of the stuff, though, is if you model...
Right.
If you model what it's supposed to be, you will have people who don't talk about it, but they're emulating you by seeing the modeling that's happening in front of them. So if you have a product that they want, they'll argue that you're not really getting that product because of those things, mm-hmm. but they're doing it secretly. You're teaching them and you don't have to use any words.
That's good. There's a lot of people, I think, that could benefit from that portion of the conversation when I'm losing and I'm stuck in this cycle. Why do I keep losing? And do I even want to break the cycle?
Some words that I use all the time in this scenario. Yeah. I don't frame it as a negative thing, like a loss or whatever. I phrase it as we get to start over, right? Here's where our beginning is, right? We can do this. And at any time, if you want to start over, you can come and start over. And then you got to go through the trail again. But if you refer to it as a starting over, that means if our job is to get progress, and if we're starting over, we give up the progress, and is giving up the progress worth the chocolate cake?
Yeah. So I read this book this summer. It reminds me of what you were saying there. The author, Jesse, went to live with some monks, but before he did that, one of the reasons he did is he climbed this mountain, and he went with his buddies, and it was one of the deadliest mountains, and they climbed the mountain. They weren't able to climb the mountain. At the peak of the mountain, it was like 250 mile an hour winds, and it was cold, and they had to buy all the specialty gear and stuff, and they get up to the top of the mountain after, you know, 2 days of climbing, all this stuff, and they were, you know, literally a quarter mile from the summit, but if they had continued pressing on, they would have gotten stuck on the side of the mountain and could have died. So they had to push back, goes home all dejected, disappointed. And 5 or 6 days later, he's sitting there, talking to his wife as he gets home. And she's like, well, you can do it next year. And he was like, I may not be here next year. And so he stepped up and he's like, I'll just go do it again. And that's exactly what you're talking about. Is, hey, just do it over. There's no shame in, hey, let's start again. How many people have had to start a business again, or have had to start a relationship again, or have had to step back into some stuff? And I think that's an important thing for our listeners to catch on to. Winners don't win all the time,
right?
Like,
so if you use best lose. If you use phraseology, if you're going to climb a mountain and you said, I'm going to do that regardless of anything, you would never use that phraseology if you wanted to win. And you also wouldn't let things be as, you know, like general either. You're not like, I'm going to go do something, I'm going to do it, right? Not because then it doesn't tell you what you're even doing. But you'll notice what the words that we use really matter. You could find out if someone's trying to like cower from an obligation, trying to put themselves on the hook, or just be overly, you know, zealous or something like that.
No, it's so true. My wife and I were just having this conversation. It was, this season we're coming into, we got all the kids going into school, and we got orientations, and we got back to schools, and the school's got, you know, made some decisions we didn't agree with in terms of mass. And so we're like, how do we handle all this stuff? And in the midst of this, you know, we've got some big stuff coming up church-wise. My wife's speaking at a women's retreat. She's got just a lot of stuff on the plate. And we were laying in bed the one night, and she looked at me and she's like, I'm just so overwhelmed. And she was in this mode where she was telling me how she felt. And I got to a spot and I was like, hold on. And I was like, we're going to make this worse, and we're going to start going in a spiral, because while you may feel that way, if we talk that way and then we think that way, and then it's just going to continue to be, and yes, we'll all be overwhelmed.
Yep.
And I said, so while you may not feel that way, we have to change our language to step into what we want to feel and what we want to think. And so let's start with some gratitude. Like, we're grateful that we have a school to send our kids to, and we're grateful that we, you know, and re-engineering that space, be well frustrated with certain things, or well overwhelmed with certain things, or well certain things, it's a blessing that we have this opportunity. Charlotte's starting piano lessons, and we got soccer, and we got, how blessed are we that we get to do that? And so we can complain that we're so busy, we can get into that spiral, and you just end up compounding the loss, right? I can remember in high school, playing baseball, and we'd lose a game. And I can remember that the next practice coach was so particular about his words, because he didn't want to compound the loss and put us on a streak of losing. He wanted to nip that. Hey, what did we learn? What do we tweak? What was character building for us? How are we going to, you know, we got the next game, and it was always about, hey, we're going to take the next step. We're going to win the next one. We're not going to dwell here on the loss. Let's get it, move on, and go on to the next thing. And I think that's important for people to really grasp that, because a lot of people get into those spots where they just start spiraling,
right?
Because they lose one thing, and then it's like, well, you know, all I do is lose, and all, you know, that, and the boss always thinks this, and my wife is always complaining about that. And then you end up in this spiral, and what was one small loss over here ends up compounding, and you get a loss here, and you get a loss here, and then all you're doing, and you're like, well, my life's just terrible. And you end up, and people end up in a 30, 40 year spiral. I've met people, right, you know, that everything is bad and the sky is always falling. And I'm going, hold on a second. You had one loss 30 years ago and you let that spiral for the next 30 years. Yeah, it sucked to lose that. But at the end of the day, like, you have this going for you and this going for you and that going for you. So talk a little bit about language, because I know you were getting into that. There's language of winners and language of losers. I'm a big proponent of that. And there are times where I catch myself and I go, all right, I'm talking like a loser, but I'm a winner. So I need to shift my language so that I'm talking like a winner. I mean, I feel like a winner right now, but I need to talk that way. So what are some of the things that you kind of see in that category for winning language? Obviously, positivity, optimism, but you're very intentional with your words.
So we kind of pick those. We started this conversation about it, like choosing which one of our endeavors. And yeah, a lot of us will pick that endeavor based on sort of the title instead of the subchapter. And the subchapter is a lot less boring. And, you know, it's a captivating, you know, the title has to be captivating and get you really, you know, dug into it. But there's two parts of this. And rewind me back to the title thing, because I want to connect this and I know I'm going to forget. Mm-hmm. So you have two options here. Now, when something upsets you, right, you want to vent, you want to get your negative feelings out of you, but your subconscious does not know, it's not connected with your emotions. It doesn't have a yes, no. It's just like a computer. It only gives what you take it, and it really doesn't care what the output is. So if you're like, oh man, I really wish I had a blue car. The subconscious is like, I got to find a blue car. What do I do? Make some suggestions, intuition, where's the blue car? And it starts putting your brain in a gear to look for a blue car. It doesn't care whether or not a blue car is good for you. It doesn't do that. It's not part of its game, right? It only says, look for a blue car, and it thinks of a billion different ways to put a blue car, you know, directly in front of you. But you have these two modes where you have to have the feeling of you got to vent, but at the same feeling, you got to use positive language that has your subconscious looking for an end, like deciding on an end. I did come back to it, but deciding on the end. But you have to almost have some intelligence going into a bad thing where you have to stop yourself and say, okay, I'm upset. And I got to get I got to vent. I got to get rid of it. But I also got to put the autopilot on before I vent. What do I want out of this? All right. I'm going to say some colorful words and I'm going to pound on the couch. But before I do that, let me make sure I get to a healthy place in the end. So rah, 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 blue car. You know, that's the way that it needs to get.
So and that is very true. I think you have those moments where you need to release some of that stuff. But at the end of the day, you have to be calculated, because if you turn into that cycle, it's just
horrible. Did anybody ever give you like the owner's manual on your subconscious and how to use it and how to work it? No.
Right.
Nobody teaches you that crap. And so like what you refer.
It's trained very subconsciously.
Dang.
But I'll be here all week. It's one of those subtle things, right? You learn from mom and dad, and you learn from grandparents, and you learn from friends, and you know, those values and those cultures and those undertones and those fears and all of that stuff is kind of built into the cake. The words that parents use, you know, Sam and I wrestled, and we've not been perfect by any means with our kids, but we really tried to, you know, we heard so many parents being like, be careful, be careful, be careful. And there are times where we do that because our men make us nervous. But with Charlotte, particularly, when it was just one, we felt more bold. And every time we felt like saying, be careful, we would try and switch it with be brave. Yes. And there were times where she would leap off of things and I'm like, oh, I want to tell her, be careful. Don't fall off that. Don't whatever. But just switching those subtleties will create bravery in her heart for something down the road here. We'll switch the gears, where honestly saying, be careful all the time. It's interesting. Graham playing soccer, and I caught this. So he kind of is boy. And with his brother, sometimes he's a bull in a china shop. Like, he just will steamroll them and knock them over. And we've harped on him to be kind to his brothers, and when knock them over, pick them up, make sure they're okay. Well, at the soccer, he gets going, and some of these kids are smaller than him, and he screamed this one kid. It was totally legal, but he stopped playing, made sure the kid was okay. Nice. And stuff like that. And then it happened again, and I'm like, well, maybe I got to tell him there's a difference. When you're on the athletic field, if you run that kid over and it's legal, just keep going, you know? And, but that sort of subconscious thing is built in there. Like, when he knocks somebody over, he immediately is like, are you okay? Can I help you? Because he's done it 1,000 times to his siblings. And I'm like, dude, you can't just steamroll your brothers. You got to make sure they're okay. You got to make sure you do that. But it's a subconscious thing. And now it's affecting his conscious behavior on a athletic standpoint, where normally he'd be aggressive and steamroll and not care. But we've corrected it so many times. And it's so fascinating when you bring that up. So many of us have this subconscious built in, I'm going to lose. And so
I can't afford it. It's not going to happen. I've not enough time. I don't have enough friends. The whole thing across the board.
Yeah.
From the time we're little, we hear our parents do it, and then we're programming our subconscious to lose no matter what.
So Sam and I have tweaked language around some finance stuff, particularly. The kids will say to us, you know, can we get that? We never say we can't afford it, and we never say it's too expensive. Now, there are times where it slips, and I'll look at my wife and say, no, it's not too expensive. We're choosing not to buy it. And she'll look at me like, we're choosing not to buy it because it ain't in our bank account. You know, she'll be real funny with it.
I love that.
But it is one of those subtle things, because then they'll grow up in a spot where everything's too expensive. Well, we can't afford that. We can't do that. We can't. And everything's in the negative rather than, hey, we're choosing not to do that. We have something else we're going to buy with that money. And putting it in that sort of perspective, it sounds wordsmithy and it sounds cheesy, but it really does affect the subconscious of your kids. And so when you bring that into a business context, you bring that into a personal life context, what is your subconscious saying really becomes a question. Are you saying winning things or losing things? Have you been trained to be in the negative and be in that space? And it's so important to recognize that that's the first step in the battle, is like, I'm speaking loss, I'm speaking deficit, I'm speaking negative. And if I want to have the other side, I need to speak this way, even when I don't have it.
Yeah, and when you're, it's no different than learning to throw a baseball. It's a practice thing where if you've never done it or never even thought about this, chances are it's the same way that if you never thrown a baseball before, like, you might get general, right?
Right.
But you're not throwing a curveball and you're not throwing it with any accuracy. But if you do it, if you know, I feel like I've done it long enough that if you observed me in my word usage, you could clearly tell that it's intentional, right?
Yeah.
And so that if you want to watch someone who doesn't do it, which side are they on? More negative.
Well, you guys are so intentional, and you've told me this, that there are even some songs at church that bother you, and you'll switch the language and sing your version of it, which I find to be so cool.
And I'm the most annoying person, because I test myself by going around correcting people when they use the wrong version of it. People don't like that at all.
You should, the next time that happens, you should text me the song and how you changed it. I'd be so curious in that, because Pastor Mike and I are very intentional in the songs that we pick. You know, obviously we want them to be theologically correct, and we want them to, you know, do certain things. But since you've said that to me, I've been more conscious with, you know, the style of the words. Are we speaking in the negative or the positive? Are we affirming? Are we, and it's very,
and on the subtle level, we just said, like, picking what a victory would be. If you could say, I want to be someone who can be and reflect, you know, optimistic or you know, positive. That's your first thing. Can you go out there and just be positive all day? Not glaring, not be delusional.
Sure.
Right. But when I have a chance, am I going to talk? Somebody came up to me and I don't want to say bad things about people, but somebody asked me a question, right? And it had they were negative and they wanted to draw me into their negativity. Yeah. And I have to, it's really hard for me to have conversations with negative people, right?
Dude, I'm so there with you. Misery loves company. And I'm like, I need you to fix that, and then we can talk.
Yeah, but I'm not one to go, right? Just go along with it. I have to, you know, I have to respond the appropriate way, because I'm a practice person at optimism. And so it's like, don't you try whatever. And you could hear their eyes roll like,
We make fun of Pastor Joanne. We'll say stuff and she'll go, And she'll exaggerate her eye roll and stuff. Now she's being a little more exaggerated than, you know, actual. She's very positive, but she'll have some fun.
If we were to teach this, if we were to take a person that didn't even know that this was a thing, what we're talking about, and be intentional about language, they do it one time and they would be really quick to say, see, look, I used positive language. It didn't work out.
Right.
Right.
Oh, I hear that all the time. All the time. Because language is the key. Is step one to becoming a winner, to stepping into the things that you're supposed to do. And most people, they are like, oh, well, I'll get that when I am a winner. I'll talk like a winner. It doesn't work that way.
Nope.
When I am a business owner with a successful business, I'll talk like that. And it's like, no, you know, it's almost like the adage, like dress for the job that you want. Like, you know, you show up in the suit because you want to be the business person. You show up for the job you want. You dress that way, even though it's not here, and eventually it'll be here. And everybody's like, well, that doesn't work that way. And it's like, well, you just haven't done it long enough. It's often like when people tell me, well, I've tried church before. And, you know, sometimes I'll give them a quippy response. Well, you haven't tried my church, but, but truthfully, most people, you know, they just like with language, well, I tried it once. I went to one service and it didn't really do it for me. And I'm like, well, it doesn't really work that way, in the same way that you can't just talk positive for one day. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's not like rubbing a magic lamp and then the genie's going to give you your three wishes. Like spirituality, like language, like health, like anything else. It takes time, consistency, decisions, and reshaping things. And so, you know, when people just throw something away, because, well, I tried it once, and I'm like, that makes me roll my eyes. And I'm like, come on. Like,
and I really wish, deeper. Like, the books that I read about this, it takes chapters and chapters. I wish there were, like, a piece of wall art that can illustrate what we're talking about. Like you just said, like, you got financial health. Financial health, when you get there, you'll give more to charity. And when you get physical health, you'll do more exercises. Yep. And when you, you know, you have opportunities, you'll be, you know, more optimistic. It's the other way around, right? Exactly. You get to more money by being more charitable. You get to more health by doing more exercises. Exactly. It's not rocket science, but we have to put it on a whole landscape.
Yeah.
You know, but you think like you reap what you sow. People will dig the actual meaning out of there. They say it, but they're not like connecting it to this kind of stuff.
Yeah. You know, I heard somebody say something and I found this to be super fascinating. You know, we say that, you know, you reap what you sow, what you put in, you get out, garbage in, garbage out, etc. But they said it in terms of energy. And I thought this was good. And I think you'll appreciate this. A lot of people think that in order to have more energy, I need to sleep. And they're like, no, that's not the case. Mm. You have to sow exercise. And then you'll reap energy. You sow energy, you get energy. You sow sleep, right? I don't know if you've ever done this, but you know, I'm going to get a few extra hours of sleep. And then you're like, oh, you're kind of groggy all day. You took too much. And then what do you want to do? You want to go back to sleep. You've literally sowed sleep. And so you reap sleep. And you know, for people to understand that the things that I'm putting in now, if I'm going to sow in the negative, I'm going to reap in the negative. If I don't, you know, a lot of people will come to me and be like, you know, pastor, I don't like the season I'm in of having too many losses or whatever. I'm like, sometimes you're eating the fruit that you planted 5 years ago. Like you sowed those seeds and I'm sorry you don't like them. But those were the investments you made. Now I'm not just talking financially, like, and that may be a very financial thing, but you're reaping the physical investments you made and you're reaping the spiritual investments you made and the relational investments. Like you put those seeds in the ground, you watered them.
Yeah. and here's the thing. Like, and it's not a binary thing where when, you know, the people who are discovering health in those departments aren't just all planting winners, right?
Right.
The bad seeds are with us too. The problem is like our goal is 51% that we have more good than bad, right? Yeah. And then you don't hear about our bad ones. Why? Because if you're looking for bad ones, you're going to find bad ones. So the people that don't talk about it, it's not that they're not discovering it. So you feel kind of alone because you're like bathing in all of your defeats and you want everybody to notice all of your defeats, but you're causing all of your defeats even then more some. Make your goal 51% like us and, you know, I'm sorry. I'm all loaded.
It's good.
Today.
I like this. It's good. You're feisty. It's good. So I think as we kind of wrap this idea up, you know, when you talk about winning, you talk about the right mindset, you talk about the right words, all of that ultimately though produces action because you can say all the right things, but if you don't get off your rump and do it, it doesn't matter. I can have the right vision board in place. I can say the right things, but ultimately I'm the one that has to get on the scale and go to the gym.
Right.
I can have the right stuff in that. I can have the right network. I can have the right connections. But if I don't pull the trigger and start the business, it's never going to do anything. Like there's ultimately, it comes down to action. For those people that are gun shy, in watching my 8-year-old soccer team, the ones who are most aggressive score the most goals.
Yes.
It's the way it goes. The sweet little girl that's out there picking the flowers is not going to score any goals.
Right.
Love her. She's going to have a great time. She's a smile. Mom, dad are going to be pumped to take pictures of her in her soccer uniform, but she's not going to score any goals.
Right.
How do you help people take action? Some people are afraid to take action because, well, I might get hurt. Some people are afraid to take action because I might miss. How do we help people take action? It's good that, yes, we have to have the mindset in place. We got to have the language, but ultimately it has to lead us to a place of action. This is something I've been hollering at the church about for since you've been there. You know, we can talk about it, sing about it, preach about it, pray about it, but ultimately if we don't do it, it doesn't do anything. How do we help people take action?
I would say that there's a definite process to doing this, right? So I have four steps to it. So I have an idea, right? And my idea I have to think about first, right? And then after I have the idea, I have to vocalize it and say it out loud. And then if the idea is good, then I have to act on it and trust the words and the ideas and the actions of before.
Yeah.
And then I debrief and basically repeat the cycle over and over again. I don't want people to be ashamed that they have to go in the corner and talk themselves up before they take on something that they're intimidated by. It's not something that you should shirk, but don't, it's one of those things where it might be necessary for you to get up the courage to get to the next level with action, but you've got to connect the two. It's not like if you have an idea, but you never do anything with it, it really wasn't anything. It was wasted energy. Has to go from idea to verbalization, verbalization to action, action to audit it down. Look at what you did, look at good, bad. And you do it on a small scale and you get into this habit of you're constantly feeding yourselves these mini wins that grow. They stack on one another.
Yeah. And those small wins, I think, are important. It reminds me of a scripture, Joe. You've been waiting for that all show.
Thank you.
In one of the Minor Prophets, it says, don't despise the day of small beginnings. And I think, it says actually the Lord rejoices to see the work begin. A lot of people in their starting are like, well, you know, that I don't want to celebrate too soon, but you have to string together and celebrate those small wins. You know, we launched the website for the company. We, you know, got our first lease or whatever it is. Like you have to take those moments. I hired my first employee. You have to celebrate those things, not like a touchdown dance and like you've won the game, but you have to acknowledge them. I think of, some of the social media companies and stuff like that, that like, you know, it's very easy and very measurable because they're able to say like, oh, we reached 10,000 followers or 1 million followers. A lot of people on TikTok right now that I follow, you know, crossing big thresholds, and they celebrate and they do something cool for their followers. And they're just marking that moment. They're not saying, hey, I'm done. I've succeeded. I hit 1 million. I'm done. But yet you have to string together some of those wins in order to turn around and go, all right, we're going to win the game. It's kind of like, you know, during a football game, you high five some guys who score a touchdown, because that's going to get you ultimately to the end of the game with hopefully more points than the other team. How do you celebrate the little wins without stopping playing the game?
So I'm going to only talk to one group. So the one group I'm not going to talk about are the logical, mathematic, right side brain. They have an easier time with process based mini wins.
Right.
Left people are can get more addicted to the dopamine from this process. And so this is a more method. And the only way that I know that when you're addicted to something is you have to desensitize yourself to the effects of whatever you're addicted to. Mm-hmm. So you're getting there. Like if you're scratching something off of your to-do list, you're getting a little bit of dopamine, but it's not enough when you're comparing that with scoring a touchdown, right? You can't scratch things off the list because you need touchdowns, and that's your problem right now. So when I find myself being overstimulated in a certain area, I will like clear the deck, remove all of that stimulation, get to some quietness, and then I can feel good about crossing the thing off the list. And then that voice out there that's trying to get me to do the thing to get the dopamine, it gets quieter over time. Sometimes you just need to withdraw, silence things out, give your body a chance to, you know, get regular again. So then, you know, when we get down to the regular and say, okay, today we're going to get out of, bed today, and we're going to make our bed, and we're going to feel really good that our first, you know, victory was that we conquered our schedule. And the next one is going to be conquering organization, and the next one's going to be timeliness or logical. And all of this stuff fits right in for a guy like me. That's what makes my day complete, mm-hmm. right? Other people are like, wait, you celebrated putting corners on your bed, right? That's not a thing, you know?
Yeah. No, I totally get that. And it's a small little actions yes. that you take throughout the day that help you build up to the big wins, to the touchdowns. It's the 1 yard runs that, yes. that really help us.
You
do
see
that.
This theme?
I
you
do.
See that theme?
I do. It's good. So if you want to win, you got to have the right mindset. You got to have the right language, and ultimately you have to take action, but it's not the big action. It's the little actions yes. that build to the big stuff. And so if you're out there and feeling like you're in a losing season, check your mindset. Are you thinking the right things? Check your words. Are you saying the right things? And then ultimately, are you doing the small things well and consistently? We appreciate you guys joining us. We'll be back here on Thursday.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.